welcome. This is Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. If we take a moment to reflect on why we're here today, I think one of the main reasons is that we find comfort in the friendships and the meeting of minds that happen here on Sunday. I consider members of Prairie my extended family. I think the purpose of Prairie Unitarian Universalists is to provide a safe haven for anyone who wants to take time out of their busy daily lives to reflect, share a joy or sorrow, be challenged to think about new ideas, enjoy good company, and at least once a month, good food at our Soup Sundays. We strive to be a welcoming community. We're glad you joined us. We accept your life choices of religion or no religion, your gender, your partners, and your family structure. We'll work hard to embrace your abilities and your inabilities. We urge any visitors to come again, as our services vary greatly in content and presentation by our members, as today, our minister Sandy Ingham, or someone from the greater community. Opening words will be by Robin Proud.
Take courage, friends. The way is often hard, the path is never clear, and the stakes are very high. Take courage, for deep down there is another truth. You are not alone. Wayne B. Arneson.
Heidi Hughes will light our chalice.
We gather this hour as people of faith, with joys and sorrows, gifts and needs. We light this beacon of hope, sign of our quest for truth and meaning, in celebration of life we share together.
We're now going to have reflections on The Hero's Journey by Robin Proud, who's a long-term member here at Prairie. Robin?
Thanks. All right. Yes, I want to acknowledge some folks here. I want to acknowledge Kathy, who had about 5 minutes notice that she was going to be presiding after I had this program with a lot of different elements in it. So thank you for doing that. And I want to acknowledge Katrina for putting the Facebook invite out, because somebody that I had no idea was even Unitarian mentioned to me at another event I was at, oh, I saw your name on there. So thank you for putting us into the 21st century. I should also acknowledge Ann Urbanski, who is a longtime member who now is in New Mexico. She did apparently a three-part program on this subject back when they were called lay ministries. I don't know when that was, but it was before I came in 2002. Therefore, I thought it was okay to revisit this topic. And I should also say something Kathy mentioned, as we always do, that our services vary a lot, and some people are there and go, this lady was up there 2 weeks ago. What do you mean varies? So usually you'll hear from me two or three times a year, but we had a change in our schedule, and I had a program available. So, all right. Well, I also wanted to acknowledge, some people have said they don't really enjoy responsive readings because it seems like words are being put into your mouth, which is the last thing Unitarians would want. And so if you don't want to do it, you don't have to. But that was less time you had to hear from me. So the question that I asked is, what do Luke Skywalker, Harry Potter, and Jesus have in common? Besides being the subjects of excellent UU curricula for our children. Well, there's a lot, and it's not only those three figures. So let's take an easy question. Who does Harry Potter live with at the beginning of his story?
Muggles.
But who? Well, who are they? His uncle and aunt, right? What about Luke Skywalker? And Dorothy Gale in The Wizard of Oz? Now, sometimes there are variations. In the Narnia books, the children were sent away because of the war, and they were staying with someone who wasn't a relative. And the parentage of Jesus is a little more complicated. Almost 70 years ago, Joseph Campbell published his classic, The Hero with a Thousand Faces, and this is my original book, which cost $3.95 back in the time. And I learned about this 40 years ago in a college class on mythology. Although I grew up unchurched, I lived in a Christian environment. So I knew the story of Jesus. I was amazed to find out that pretty much nothing in the Jesus story is unique to him. Around the world, there are stories of children born among special signs, placed in a box or a basket, raised by alternative parents. These characters grow up to go on journeys that have similarities in many cultures. It's not a coincidence that the same elements show up in cultures around the world, in ancient lore, and in modern movies. Joseph Campbell says, "The symbols of mythology are not manufactured. They cannot be ordered, invented, or permanently suppressed. They are spontaneous productions of the psyche. It has always been the prime function of mythology and rite to supply the symbols that carry the human spirit forward. Archetypes are forms and images which occur practically all over the earth as constituents of myth." And Jung is another one who wrote about this. Well, who is the hero? According to Joseph Campbell, the hero is the man or woman who has been able to battle past his or her personal and historical limitations to the generally valid human forms. The task is to return to us transfigured and teach the lesson that he has learned of life renewed. So here's how it looks as a story, according to Campbell. A hero ventures forth from the world of the common day into the region of supernatural wonder. Fabulous forces are there encountered, and a decisive victory is won. The hero comes back from this mysterious adventure with the power to bestow boons on his fellow man. This journey is distinct from any in the real world. Campbell says, "It is the business of mythology proper and of the fairy tale to reveal the specific dangers of the dark interior way. Hence, the incidents are fantastic and unreal. They represent psychological, not physical, triumphs. They correspond to elements in dreams and therefore in psychological analysis." So let's look at the elements of the journey. So Campbell says, the mythological hero, setting forth from his common day hut or castle, is lured, carried away, or else voluntarily proceeds to the threshold of adventure. So the heroes of the fairy tales and myths are usually not obviously strong or talented when the story begins. It's often the younger son or daughter, the peasant, the despised or slow. But they may have some unusual abilities. Jesus spoke to the priests in the temple. Harry Potter spoke to snakes. The adopted child Clark Kent has amazing strength and speed. And the heroes have an awareness that there's something else out there. We see this when Luke Skywalker gazes over his desert home planet and when Dorothy Gale sings Over the Rainbow. If any of you are fans like me of musical theater, it's the moment of the I Want song. Annie longs for a family, Marion the librarian for love, and Hamilton for his shot at fame. Almost always, the hero is not with his true family. We've got stepmothers, as we saw, orphans. There are an awful lot of dead and missing parents. Just for an aside here, when I was in college, my friends and I used to read these, some sort of like true confessions magazines just for amusement, and they were about girls who went astray. But there were never any parents in the picture. So it's the same thing, that parents would protect you maybe from life and then there'd be no story. So there's more freedom for the hero and it speaks to something within us. Kids identify with Harry Potter because at some point we all think, this can't be my real family. Lots of 11-year-olds are eagerly awaiting their invitation to Hogwarts. So the story actually begins when the hero receives a call from a herald. This could be Hagrid on a motorcycle, Ben Kenobi advising Luke of his parentage, or John the Baptist. The hero may eagerly jump at the chance, or may at first refuse the challenge. In some versions, the hero starts the journey by accident. Alice in Wonderland falls down a rabbit hole. Sometimes the hero chases an animal into the woods or goes into the woods to gather fuel. The woods represent the dark unconscious. And interestingly, in other parts of the world where woods are not so common, it could be the desert or the sea. So back to Campbell's description of the story. Beyond the threshold, then, the hero journeys through a world of unfamiliar yet strangely intimate forces, some of which severely threaten him, some of which give magical aid. The hero enters a new realm and becomes along the way a new self. He encounters animals, people, or magical creatures who may help him or harm him. Think of the Wizard of Oz. Well, first of all, Dorothy goes from black and white to color, and then she's joined by her comrades, the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, the Cowardly Lion, while she battles the Wicked Witch and her accomplices. The children in Narnia meet a friendly badger family, but one boy also meets the evil White Queen, the source of temptation. Many stories feature a kind of test, where the hero who is kind to a helpless animal or an old person is later rewarded. At some point, the hero may meet with or mate with a representative of the goddess, who is life itself. Often this part of the story represents the Oedipal dilemma, starting with the story of Oedipus himself. Sophocles didn't need to know Freud or Joseph Campbell to create a story of a man killing his father and marrying his mother. It's not usually so direct in myths, but there's often a conquering or dethroning of a powerful figure and a marriage thereby earned. But even here, there are hidden depths. The father, mother, and child actually are all aspects of ourselves that must be integrated. So getting on with our story, the hero may defeat or conciliate this power and go alive into the kingdom of the dark, or be slain by the opponent and descend in death. This descent into the kingdom of the dark could be Jonah in the belly of the whale, or Jesus after his crucifixion. Harry Potter has a scene where he's sort of half dead and he's able to speak with Dumbledore, who is dead. Dorothy's imprisoned in the witch's castle. Frodo must go to the crater of Mount Doom. Luke Skywalker is frozen, but he comes back to face a classic Oedipal scene with his father. Recent authors and filmmakers knew exactly what they were doing when they used these elements. J.K. Rowling includes many names and terms from mythology. She knew that she was incorporating these ancient tales. And George Lucas has said that he deliberately drew from Campbell's work, as well as movie serials and World War I aviation films. So the use of familiar story elements helped me a few years ago when I taught a UURE class for 4th to 6th graders, and maybe Henry was in that class. I'm not sure if anyone else, Jesse might be downstairs now. This curriculum was about Jesus and his radical ideas, like that women could be equal, that everyone was equal regardless of station in life, that you should share with everyone. So this is a great curriculum, the Jesus Seminar for Kids, I thought of this, where it grounds the historical Jesus in the time of the Roman occupation and shows how wildly egalitarian his teachings were. It also had fun activities like building a Palestinian village out of clay and making sandals from cardboard and yarn. In general, our Unitarian kids know little about Jesus except maybe his birth story. I wanted them to get a humanist take on the teachings and stories so they would be armed when their Christian friends brought them up. For instance, maybe the miracle of the loaves and fishes happened because everyone had brought a little something, and then when they decided to share, there was enough for everyone. If the incident actually occurred, I always told them, we have no video of this event, so this is what was said. So at the different stages of Jesus' life, which wasn't familiar to them, I asked them, well, if this were Harry or Luke, what would happen next? And there was always a similarity. Sometimes the hero is reluctant long into the journey. Do you remember Rick in Casablanca? As the Nazis round up the usual suspects, he says, I stick my neck out for nobody. But he does help Some people escape. And of course, at the end, he totally commits himself to a bigger cause. We see the same thing with Han Solo. He's a privateer, right? He's in it for the money until he shows up to save the day. The cynical hero thinks he's an egotist, but he is really compassionate. And the heart is what makes us human, according to Joseph Campbell. When we have only the mind, we become like Darth Vader, who lives for a system rather than for humanity. Even the willing hero can reach a moment when he despairs, when he sees failure, when he wants to abdicate his responsibilities. Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane asked God to let this cup pass from me before accepting his fate with "Thy will be done." In the last Harry Potter book, before the final scene, Harry says the same thing. Why does it always have to be me? I found this fascinating because Christian groups were quick to condemn the whole series because of its witchcraft. But Harry turns out to be a total Christ figure. When the hero accepts the role, he becomes one with God. In Harry's case, he's reconnected with his parents and others who have died, and he's surrounded by their love and protection. Here's the end to the hero's story. When he arrives at the nadir of the mythological round, that is the bottom, he undergoes a supreme ordeal and gains his reward. The triumph may be represented as the hero's union with the goddess mother of the world, his recognition by the father creator, his own divinization, or again, if the powers have remained unfriendly to him, his theft of the boon he came to gain. Intrinsically, it is an expansion of consciousness and therewith of being. So sometimes he has to steal something. Prometheus steals fire, or Jack steals something from the gold from the giant. The final work is that of the return. If the powers have blessed the hero, he now sets forth under their protection. If not, he flees and is pursued. At the return threshold, the transcendental powers must remain behind. The hero reemerges from the kingdom of dread. The boon he brings restores the world. After his adventures, the hero returns with new knowledge, skills, and power. He may not want to return. In many stories, the hero enters a world out of time. For instance, in the woods, he's captured by fairies and it loses track of time. He may come back much later, like Rip Van Winkle. Or he may be eager to leave, but he needs to use tricks to evade pursuit, like Jack from the Giant or Perseus with the head of Medea. The return and integration is not a random epilogue, but the natural outgrowth of the hero's journey. He may have brought something for his tribe, Prometheus bringing fire, or Moses, the Ten Commandments. He may have brought a message. Buddha, Jesus, and Mohammed all have stories of retiring somewhere and emerging with a message. He may need to set things to right. Odysseus, after his long journey, has to deal with his wife's suitors. Frodo has to scourge the Shire. Throughout time and around the world, these metaphors appear of life as a journey. That's why we have so many readings, because there are so many that have to do with life as a journey. It's a journey that goes ever on, and yet it fits within a larger cycle. And it's all our readings had to do with the quest or the return. What Campbell points out is that all these elements endure not just because humans around the world love and remember stories, but that they speak to something within us that cannot easily be expressed. After I learned about this basic story, I was amazed at how regularly it shows up. I wrote a paper in college about the 19th century novel, but it's called Père Goriot or Old Goriot by Balzac. The story begins with the young, naive hero arriving in Paris from the provinces to seek his fortune. So Balzac was way before Campbell or Freud, but he knew that fairy tales had a common structure, and he built that right in. There is a society woman who takes the young man under her wing, and she says, "I'll be your fairy godmother." There's also an evil character opposing our hero, and at one point, he drugs the hero to keep him from interfering with his plans. Eugene is actually unconscious for several days in a sort of descent to the underworld. At the end of the book, the hero, older and wiser, stands on a hill overlooking Paris and throws out the challenge, it's you and me now. So once you start looking, you see this everywhere. As a fan of the musical Hamilton, I found something online that combined Hamilton and Star Wars. The first song in Hamilton summarizes his early life. It fits right in with our theme. He was an orphan. He longed for a way to distinguish himself. He left his Caribbean home for New York to make his fortune. So while they're playing that rap song, the video showed scenes from Star Wars with Luke. And it works because of all the matching elements. And Lin-Manuel Miranda also knew the tradition. He said that a scene where Hamilton meets his friend, enemy, Aaron Burr, was to be a version of Harry Potter meeting Draco Malfoy. So he meets the bad friend first before he meets his good friends. And they all refer back to tales where it's not immediately obvious that the beautiful person is a serpent in disguise, or the ugly hag, toad, or beast is actually a royal under a spell. And recently, I saw the opera The Magic Flute by Mozart. The hero has to go on a journey and pass tests to win his desire. So you'll see this everywhere. You probably will have some more examples. I'll conclude with a couple of quotes from Joseph Campbell. He said, "The most heroic act is to discover who you are. And the most heroic journey is from childhood to adulthood." He also said, "Every religion is true as metaphor. Religions are true for their time and place. Heaven and hell and all the gods are within us. Myths and stories today, as in ancient times, show us how to live and harmonize the mind and body." So I'll be happy to hear some comments. I'm not at all expert on this field, but you will undoubtedly have something to add. Yeah, and there's another presentation I'll do in the future about the women's version, because I found a very interesting book saying that although we had Dorothy in there, she was kind of an exception, that and that the journey of women as seen through literature and popular culture is distinct. So that's a follow-up, but that's a very good point. You're right, this is definitely a young, just about always, the hero who starts out is young. Yeah, very good. And it's often the stories are what people remember or what touches people, whatever political side it's on, whereas facts and figures, wonderful as they are, do not have the same impact on most people. So that is something to be aware of as to anything that you want to get people involved in, what is the story behind it? Yeah, and Martin Luther King and Gandhi both said at different points, I'm not a good enough messenger for this, and yet they were so committed that they did it. They didn't feel that they were perfect either.
Thank you, Robin.
All right, thank you.
Robin slightly mentioned it, but I wanted to point out that Robin went on the docket on Wednesday. So we had a cancellation, so thankfully, we have these wonderful members who have this information that they can bring to us at a very short notice.
Now, join us for coffee and stay for our parish meeting.